Penguin Random House Audio presents Crashing in Love by Jennifer Richard Jacobson. Read for you by Jeremy Carlisle Parker. For Jim Talpy, whose story inspired this one. Chapter 1. I skitter around the bedroom I share with my sister Calla, tucking my nightshirt beneath my pillow, picking up the stuffed animals that fell off my bed in the night. There. My side of the room? Neat as a boat galley. Calla's side? Hurricane aftermath. The world won't come to an end if you leave your bed unmade for one day, Peyton, my oldest sister Bronwyn reassures me as she floats back to her own bedroom. She's sweet in the morning, like the maple syrup in her tea. Bronwyn's probably right. And if I don't hurry, I'm going to miss my chance to say goodbye to my best friend before she leaves for the summer. But one of the gazillion quotes I have pinned on the wall behind my bed reads, "Tidy room, tidy mind." And it's so true. My 10-minute pickup makes me feel as if I'm solidly on the path to creating a better me. I grab the going-away card I made for Mari, my water bottle, motivate, hydrate, feel great, and my charged phone. "Heading out," I call to my sisters, who are not technically babysitting but are in charge. "When will you be back?" Calla asks from the corner of the living room. She's plucking out a new song, prickly thorn but sweetly worn, on her mandolin. "I don't know," I say, pushing my glasses farther up my nose. "Soonish." She either doesn't hear me or doesn't really care. It irks me that she even gets to ask. I don't mind if Bronwyn is in charge. She's 16. But Calla is 13 and only 11 months older than I am. Then I hear an Eleanor Roosevelt quote in my head. "You can often change your circumstances by changing your attitude." I make an attempt. "Bye, Calla," I say as cheerily as I can. Outside, I clip on my bike helmet, tighten the strap, and take off. Early morning is one of my favorite times of day to ride. The country road that winds around Muscle Cove, our tiny town in mid-coast Maine, is extremely narrow and has no bike lane. It's also filled with potholes. But at this hour, the early workers, or the salt, as Mom calls them, lobstermen, bakers, housekeepers, and news reporters, or should I say news reporter. Mom is the only one in town, and she gets up early to dig for stories at Day's Donuts. Have left. And the late workers, the pepper, bartenders, musicians, and chefs, are still snoozing. Which means I can ride closer to the middle of the road, where the pavement is less cracked, swerving around dips and roadkill as needed. High tide, I notice as I catch my first glimpse of the sun-speckled harbor between the trees. Seagulls are screeching in the distance, which probably means that a fishing boat just returned. Maybe it's Mari's father's boat. Maybe he went out extra early to get back in time to take Mari to her aunt's house in Gloucester. Gloucester. At first, I was furious with Mari for her last-minute decision to spend the summer helping her aunt, who admittedly just had the cutest baby ever, by looking after her toddler cousins. We had planned our perfect summer, a plan that felt like a promise. This was going to be our summer of working at the Anchorage Hotel, folding towels, setting up beach chairs, filling water pitchers, designing our seventh-grade wardrobe, and finding our first summer boyfriends. I'd even talked Mari into creating a boyfriend list. The top 10 musts for the perfect guy. Just like mine. I stand on my bike pedals and pump faster. Friends should be loyal. Friends should stick to their plans. Friends should not break promises. But then I think of the quote I framed in dried flowers before hanging it above my bed. The only way to have a friend is to be one. And I know in my heart that Mari needs to help her family. We'll just have to share plans and encouragement by phone. When life gives you lemons, ack! I nearly run over a pair of sunglasses. I quickly pull to the left and... Oh my God! What the... There's a pile of clothes in the road. I swerve again and barely avoid it, but my tires hit the gravel and my bike spins out from under me. As it falls, I try to leap out of the way, but the bike lands on my ankle and the pedal gouges me. Ouch! I hop in circles. My ankle stings outrageously where my skin has been scraped off. What kind of jerk leaves clothes in the middle of the road, where cars, or bikes, might have to swerve dangerously to avoid hitting them? I pull my bike off to the side and decide to do the same with the pile so it doesn't cause an accident. Make that another accident, I think as I hobble over. I grab the sunglasses and pop them in my pocket. Then I approach the rest of the debris. I can see what looks like a windbreaker. Not just a windbreaker. A hand. Oh my God! A hand! This isn't a pile of clothes. It's a person! I scream and race back to my bike. Practically choking, I pull up on the handlebars, wanting to get as far from this spot as possible, but... I drop my bike again. Buck up, I tell myself. You are braver than you think, I tell myself. I pull out my phone and dial 911, then take a deep breath and go back to the body. It's a boy, I see now, around my age. He's curled up as if he's sleeping, one arm covering part of his face. There's blood on his head, but I don't see any on the road. I stare at his back, hoping to see it rise and fall with his breathing. Please be alive. Please be alive. Please be alive. As my phone rings, I crouch. Can you hear me? I say softly, suddenly afraid of startling him. He doesn't respond. 911, what's your emergency? Says a woman. My voice catches. There's a boy in the middle of the road. I think he might have been hit by a car. He's not moving. I don't know if he's... What's your name and location? She sounds calm and helpful. Peyton Campbell. I'm in Muscle Cove, on Winding Lane. I look around for a landmark and see a mailbox. Near 118 Winding Lane. Hi, Peyton, honey. This is Mrs. Dwyer. Do you know the boy? My first grade teacher. I didn't know she was a 911 dispatcher now. No, I squeak. No, at least, I don't think so. He's curled up on his side, and his arm is covering most of his face. I don't want to move him in case... That's right, Peyton. You don't want to move him. I've got help coming. How old would you say he is? I glance down again. 12 or 13? I squat down again and touch his hand. His fingers twitch. Oh my God! He's alive! He's alive! I shout into the phone. Is he conscious? Mrs. Dwyer asks. Can you hear me? I say to the boy, louder this time. No response. I stare at the hand that moved, which, and I know this is incredibly strange to say, is nearly perfect in shape. His fingernails are square, and he has a scratch on his thumb. I reach out and gently take his hand. And I swear on my life I feel movement. I'm here, I say. I'm not going to leave you. I promise. Just hang on. That's when I hear a vehicle coming from the direction of my house. What if the driver doesn't see us in time? I jump up, wave my arms, and scream, Stop! The driver sees us just as she comes barreling over a small knoll and veers off the road, nearly hitting a tree. It's Cecilia Hobbs, my neighbor, in her red pickup. She gets out and starts to approach us, but then, realizing, I suppose, that someone else could do exactly what she nearly did, run over this boy again, she gets back in her truck and parks it across the road so no vehicles can pass. I remember Mrs. Dwyer. Hello? She's still on the line. Mrs. Hobbs is here, I tell her.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?